Hey, this is Peach Neon Pink Ramblings, a podcast where I talk about everything Korean entertainment related, especially Korean dramas, Korean movies, Korean variety shows, K-pop, and K-beauty. So thank you so much for tuning in and listen on. Hey everyone, this is Mandra Lee from Peach Neon Pink Ramblings, a podcast that talks about everything Korean, Korean dramas, K-beauty, K-pop, and everything. And this week is, this is a whole comeback. This is comeback week, which is, interestingly enough, a side note to this and a side story is that me and my family do these like backyard KBBQ sessions that we call it. That started in the pandemic or during the pandemic because you couldn't go to an all-you-can-eat Korean barbecue restaurant at that time. And we would just pretty much hang out and do all-you-can-eat Korean barbecue in our backyard. So we've stopped doing it for a while now, and we've just recently come back to it this few days ago for Mother's Day. So this whole week's theme is comeback week, which is appropriate because I have recently gotten back into watching Korean dramas, and I wanted to do this podcast episode because I wanted to talk about the Korean drama of 2024 so far that everybody and their grandmas and their ajummas, everybody, are watching and posting on their social media and especially Facebook. And this is the K-drama Queen of Tears. We're gonna talk about that because I have a few things that I really loved about it, and there's also a few things that I didn't like too much about it. So we're gonna talk about that. Also, we're going to talk about this little Korean drama that is quite delightful so far. This drama called Lovely Runner. It's quickly gaining popularity among K-drama watchers like me. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. I'm actually a little bit of a primer, I guess, to why I talk about K-dramas. If you have not heard older episodes of this podcast, is that I do actually have a long history of watching K-dramas, and I've watched quite a lot in the years of watching Korean dramas. I started watching Korean dramas back in college in 2004. And back then you had to download episode that the download would take like hours, and you had to download the subtitles separately, and then the resolution was like very bad. It was like a 480p screen, and when you blew it up on your laptop screen, you hardly could make up anything on the screen. So back then, K-dramas was not as readily available as it is now, that you can just literally log in on Netflix and you can watch any popular K-drama right now, or any other streaming platform. I actually, back in college, to continue my story, would save money so I could buy the DVD box sets, because those were the only ways you could actually watch each episode in better quality. And so I do have K-drama box sets in DVD in pristine condition, actually, of dramas that I like My Name is Kim Thompson, Coffee Prince, Full House. I have this drama called Damo, which is an historical drama starring Ha Ji-won that I do love. I'm a huge fan of it. And she doesn't do that much Korean dramas anymore. She hardly does them anymore nowadays. But she's such an amazing actress. So I feel like I do have some credibility of talking about K-dramas, since I have been watching K-dramas for such a long time and have just watched so much since then. It's been like more than a decade. And so nowadays, I'm quite particular about the Korean dramas that I do end up watching, just because I do have a particular set of checklists in my brain of what I want to see in the first like few episodes of the drama, so I would actually like finish the whole series. So I'm quite particular, and that's why I wanted to talk about Queen of Tears and Lovely Runner. So we're going to talk about those two Korean dramas. We're going to talk a little bit towards the end about K-beauty stuff. We're going to talk about Korean sunscreens that I've been loving lately. I have been testing out a bunch of sunscreens lately, just because this kind of stemmed from a trip to Seoul last summer where it was scorching heat, and I've been trying out a bunch of different brands of Korean sunscreens since then. So we're going to talk about which sunscreens I found work really well with my skin. So we're going to talk about it a little bit. On the K-pop side, we're not really going to talk about anything because I've been taking a break from listening to K-pop. I've been kind of been exploring other music from other Asian countries. I've been kind of listening a little bit back to J-pop, harkening back to my high school years of listening to Japanese pop. I've also been listening to a lot of OPM, which is Filipino pop music. So we're going to talk a little bit of K-pop maybe in a future podcast episode. So today on this podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about the dramas and a little bit about beauty. So stay tuned and listen on. Okay, guys, so we're back in this section. It's just the K-drama section of this podcast, Peach Neon Pink Ramblings, a podcast where I talk about my thoughts on Korean dramas, K-pop, and K-beauty. So this is actually the Korean drama section of this podcast. Like I said in the intro section, I'm actually gonna talk about a hot topic right now, which is Queen of Tears. But before that, I wanted to talk about pretty much the last Korean drama that actually kind of piqued my interest, I guess. There was actually quite a lot last year. In the summer, I was watching King the Land, which was a very cute rom-com. And I was also one of those people that were just avid watchers of the Korean drama Moving, which I still think is, even though it did reach a lot of success, it didn't reach that much level of success because it wasn't on a huge streaming site. It was on Hulu, Disney Plus here in the States, compared to other Korean dramas that gets a lot more attention because they're on Netflix or something and it's readily available to everybody. But Moving was amazing. I was floored at the storytelling and just the action and the CGI, all of that stuff, and the story was just so well written. It was amazing storytelling for a Korean drama, and it is one of those prime examples of why Korean dramas are just so captivating to an international audience, as well as just in Korea itself. So, side note, Moving, it has stars Han Hyo-joo and Jo In-sung, who are like one of the top two, like up there, favorite actors and actresses. And they're definitely, the ensemble cast is amazing. So, but we're not here to talk about those dramas. I might do a special kind of like side episode just to talk about Moving, because I do love that drama. And I still say that for me, it is like the best Korean drama to have come out last year in 2023. And there's a lot of things to talk about it. So but today we're actually going to talk about another Korean drama that has just been proving itself to be a hot topic in Korean drama land. which is Queen of Tears, which has just ended, actually, about a week, a little bit more than a week ago or so. It ended around the end of April. It had about a 2-month run because it is a 16 episode Korean drama. We're going to do a little bit of a background because, you know, we're going to talk about this drama, I guess. So I guess we're going to do a little bit of background so you kind of know what we're talking about. So Queen of Tears is written by Park Ji-yoon, who is also the writer of Crash Landing on You. And I believe if you are newer to the Korean drama scene, you at least would have heard of Crash Landing on You, because Crash Landing on You pretty much blew up during the pandemic when everybody was at home and they were tuning on Netflix and were slowly running out of things to watch, and people started discovering Korean dramas, and Crash Landing on You was one of those dramas that was just a massive juggernaut hit because everybody was at home and everybody wanted to watch something online. So it is by the same writer, and it actually stars Kim So Hyun and Kim Ji Won, the Kim couple they talk about right now. And this, a little bit of a synopsis, this is a series that actually depicts the crisis and rekindling of love between Hong Hae-in, a third generation chaebol heiress of the Queen's group. This is played by actress Kim Ji Won, and Baek Hyun-woo, the son of farmers from Yeongdeuri. And their 3 years of marriage, Baek Hyun-woo is played by superstar actor Kim So-yeon. So this was aired in Korea on TVN from March 9 to the end of April 28, 2024, during the weekends. And it was available for streaming on Netflix, mostly around the globe. So it is a very significant Korean drama because it surpassed Crash Landing on You on the ratings for it's basically the highest rated TVN series with a nationwide rating of 24.85% for its final episode, and so it's pretty much up there. I believe it is like the third highest rated series on Korean cable television that was aired so far this year. So it is a big Korean drama, and we're going to talk a little bit about it tonight, today. So let me preface this by, I guess, saying that I am not really a huge Kim So-yeon fan. I have not really watched a lot of his series. I've watched a few. I've watched a lot of his earlier work, Moon Embracing the Sun, which was a pretty big Korean drama back in the day in early 2010s as well. And I also saw him in a K-film called The Thieves. But I think for me, the biggest drama of his that I've actually enjoyed was It's Okay to Not Be Okay. That was back in, I think, the tail end of 2020, if I'm right. And he also did this cameo in Hotel de Luna, I believe, and towards the end. So I'm actually not one of those K-drama girlies who have watched a lot of Kim So-yeon, but he's actually known to be one of the highest paid actors in South Korea. He has earned multiple awards, including like a bunch of Baeksang Art Awards, Blue Dragon, almost everything. He's like quite well known, and he is like in his 30s. So when I started watching Queen of Tears, I actually waited to watch Queen of Tears when the last two episodes were about to air, because I have been hearing about this Korean drama a lot, like just online. Everybody was talking about it. Like almost everybody and their ajumma aunties are were talking about it on Facebook. So I was kind of a little bit curious because, you know, if a Korean drama is something that sweeps up internationally, there must be something really good about it, because it wouldn't really attract that much of viewers if it was not that great. So even though I was not a huge fan of Kim So-yeon and haven't really watched much of his work, I was a little bit piqued. The main actress, Kim Ji-won, actually, I have known from a couple of previous Korean dramas as well. She was in Descendants of the Sun, which, I mean, huge now, a classic Korean drama that if you are new to Korean dramas, you should watch. Notwithstanding that whole drama and scandal about the two main leads later on, a year after or so after that series ended. But Kim Ji-won was fantastic in that Korean drama. I also enjoyed watching her in Fight My Way with Park Seo-joon. That was quite an underrated, like, tiny little Korean drama that a lot of people are not really familiar with, but it's quite cute, and it's one of those dramas by Park Seo-joon that this was before he, like, made it big from What's Wrong with Secretary Kim, and this was before he became super famous. So this was a drama that they both started. That's a romantic comedy that was very cute, actually. So if, you know, you get the time and you want to watch an older drama, do check it out. But that's how I know Kim Ji-won. So this pairing actually is a pairing that I did not expect, but actually is very in line with the writer of Queen of Tears, because this writer is well known for writing very strong, powerful female protagonists in her series. So Crash Landing on You, Yoon Se-ri was a Chaebol. My Love from the Stars, I think, was also written by this writer. And Jo Ji-hyun's character is also pretty, is like a huge movie star or something like that, or a huge celebrity in that drama. It's been a while since I've seen that series. It's a pretty old series. So it actually stars Kim So-hyun. So it's kind of like a theme that she has on her series, of having very strong female characters. That's why when I saw that they had casted Kim Ji-won as the lead, I was like, yeah, this actress can pull it off, because Kim Ji-won is quite good at playing strong female characters. From what I remember, in Descendants of the Sun, she plays captain or something. Very high-ranking military person. In Descendants of the Sun. So she does really well in roles that require a very strong female power. She's a badass bitch, and she can play it, pretty much what I was trying to say. So I thought that it was an unexpected casting from my viewpoint, but it works. So I guess what I really want to talk about with Queen of Tears is kind of like, let's say I enjoyed it. I understand the appeal of Queen of Tears, but it is not without its weaknesses. It's a very good Korean drama, and if I would compare it to Crash Landing on You, very similar in a way that a lot of the story and the storyline and is very much hinged on the shoulders, or being carried on the shoulders of its main leads. Similar with Crash Landing on You. I think if it was newbie actors and not Hyun Bin and Son Ye Jin, I don't think it would be as effective. I love Crash Landing on You so much. I mean, I still do. I still think it's an amazing Korean drama. But I think with Queen of Tears, it didn't stick its landing. Don't come for me. But it didn't stick its landing compared to maybe Crash Landing on You. So what I loved about Queen of Tears is that this is a drama that is set in the time of I guess there's a lot of Korean dramas lately that focus on like marriage and divorce. I've watched a few Korean dramas in the past few months that were kind of like about revenge and marriage and all of that. Like, there's this Korean drama called Perfect Marriage Revenge, which was a very enjoyable drama, but it's those kind of dramas that you don't expect quality from. It's okay, but it's not cream of the crop. So there's just been a lot of that kind of trend in the plot line or the storylines of Korean dramas in the past, I would say end of 2023 to this year. It might just also be that it's just the kind of dramas that I've been gravitating towards too lately, I guess. But Queen of Tears kind of had that expectation that this is going to be big. This is going to be huge. And you have this expectation that it's going to be, the storyline is going to be amazing just because of the track record of the actors, the director, and the writer of the series. So I do kind of hold it up more and a little bit more scrutiny and up on a pedestal compared to other similar Korean dramas with similar themes, just because it kind of has, for a cable drama, a little bit more production value. So let me get back to it and like circle back to the reason why I actually initially really loved watching Queen of Tears was that in the first few episodes, we are dropped into quite like an interesting choice of where to drop the viewer in. We start off seeing Baek Hyun-woo and Hong Hae-in in 3 years after they've been married. And we've kind of zoomed past. We get a montage of like how they meet, like their little meet cute, and their dating phase, like their honeymoon phase. And we're kind of dropped into kind of like an unusual time period of their relationship. This is not something I think, just from experience of watching Korean dramas, that is quite usual in episodic wise of where to start off the series, because you meet them basically in the middle of their marriage, and pretty much as we said in the intro synopsis part is that they are a married couple that pretty much are in a crisis. They're 3 years into their marriage. There is something that happens to them that we don't find out, but we kind of, as a viewer, you get this feeling that something has happened, and this is what is causing them to be almost separated. Their marriage is breaking apart, and they're not sharing a room. There's just all these hints in the big like in the first few episodes, that you know that something has happened. And something has happened that has caused them to fall out of love, pretty much. And it is a marriage that is bogged down by circumstance, just because of Hong Hae-in's, because she is a chibol, she is poised to inherit the queen's group, and Baek Hyun-woo is pretty much a normal guy. He got thrust into the limelight of being in this very public marriage, just because his wife is a very prominent and very powerful figure in the business world. So Hyun-woo is actually the director of the legal department in the Queen's Group. So he is actually a lawyer, and a very smart one at that too. But we are kind of like put, we start off in a place that we normally don't start off in, a very typical Korean drama, which I appreciated. That's what made, that's what kind of hooked me in. It's, it was, I have this thing when I watch Korean dramas, and this is also partially why I wanted to wait till almost all of the episodes are already out, because I wanted to be able to binge watch at least the first half of this drama. And I'm the kind, now I'm quite discerning with Korean dramas that I do pick up and watch, just because for me Korean dramas are an emotional investment, and I usually, if the drama doesn't like catch me in the first few episodes, then I usually drop it and I don't finish it. So I've have countless numbers of Korean dramas that I have not finished just because it is, I didn't feel like I wanted to watch the rest of it. So that's why I wanted to wait until I can binge watch Queen of Tears, because of the hype. Like I didn't want to like watch it and wait for it and just kind of be like obligated to watch and wait each week, just because of the hype. So and because of the unusual like time in the relationship that we, the audience or the viewers are pretty much put into or set down in, I thought that was quite interesting for a Korean drama, because you kind of see them in the middle of a very like tumultuous relationship. And to me, this is where Kim Ji-won and Kim So-yeon shines as the protagonist, because I feel like in other actors or actresses of lesser acting abilities hands, this would fail spectacularly, and I probably would have not watched the rest of the episodes. And to their credit, this is where they really shine, because they capture you with their amazing believability and chemistry as a couple who is a married couple that's in crisis. Because we're set in such an unusual space or time in the drama, it's really hinged on Kim So-yeon and Kim Ji-won's chemistry, to see why they initially fell in love and why this is actually a rom-com, or kind of like a rom-dramedy, I guess. It is titled Queen of Tears after all, and there's a lot of tears involved in this Korean drama. But this is when we find out that this is why you stay watching it, because it is very believable. Actually, it wasn't the montage of like their whole dating honeymoon phase that kind of caught me in. It was at the real time while you're watching each scene that you can see that Hae-in and Hyun-woo love each other, and they are just two people who are in love that are now not running towards the same goal and not at the same pace. They've kind of got derailed. because of something significant that happened earlier on in their marriage, which they actually, you kind of find it out like around episode five, I think. I don't remember exactly, but there's a little bit of a surprise or a reveal of why they ended up at where they are currently in their marriage. This is a little bit different from the other dramas that I've watched recently that kind of similar theme of marriage, because those actually have a lot of very makjang, soap opera-ish type of feel to it. It is very makjang heavy. I would say that Queen of Tears is... Actually, side note, I actually read an article that said that the storyline for Queen of Tears was actually about like 13 years in the making or something, or like about a decade in the making. It was already written by the writer a long time ago, and you kind of do feel that in the way the plot line is, because it does feel very like, I would say, early 2010s like type of drama, because it's the type of drama that is not it is a rom-com. It has significant amounts of comedy, a lot of drama, but also a tiny, tiny touch, I guess, of being a makjang, of a soap opera. So it does still kind of maintains a little bit of a makjang feel in there. So it does feel more of a Korean drama that would have been shown in like maybe 2023. No, 20... Not 2023, but like 2013, 2015 or something, that era. So it does kind of have that feeling to it. Anyways, so because of the chemistry that you see between Kim So-hyun and Kim Ji-won, it's very believable that these two married out because of love. And do you quickly realize that love isn't everything, and it's a very sobering realization that you get while you're watching this Korean drama. I feel like a lot of people, me included, myself, watch Korean dramas as a form of escapism. Like you don't really watch like Korean dramas like a documentary to like see like the realities of daily life. You kind of want to be set in like sort of a very fictional world, but with Queen of Tears, it's the situation is outlandish, because I don't think any of us out here are just like, you know, randomly chables or something. So I mean, there might be a few lawyers who might be listening to this podcast, but I don't think that there's any like chable heiresses that are listening. So it still maintains that fact, but the relationship between Hye-in and Hyun-woo is quite realistic. I feel like it's something that is quite relatable and to any couple that is in relationship or are in a relationship for that amount of time, because you quickly realize that they do genuinely love each other, but then they're just at that point that, not that they forget that they're in love with each other, but that life has muddled that. And that's the beauty of Queen of Tears, because that's the story that it explores about how a couple who do love each other and kind of have been derailed by a very heavy and very significant incident in their life as a married couple, kind of go back. It's a little bit cute, because it's kind of a bit of a story about how Hyun-woo discovers and rekindles or rediscovers his love for his wife, and rediscovers the devotion that he has for Hye-in, but also conversely, in like a little bit of a contrast with Hye-in, that you realize that Hye-in has loved Hyun-woo like regardless, like despite of whatever has happened to them, she pretty much was the first person to she was the first to fall in their relationship, and she had just loved him all throughout this, but had kind of like lost track of it. Like, there's a point where it almost feels like Hye-in has taken her relationship with Hyun-woo for granted, just because she was so focused on her goal to inherit Queen's Group and to be a successful CEO and all that. She was very career oriented, that she kind of lost sight of being a wife. A lot of the drama, the first few episodes really involve around Hye-in having this illness. She has a brain tumor that is non-operable, that also has very few treatments because it's so rare. So a lot of it involves that, because Hyun-woo is at the end of his rope, and he has just been pressured, and he's just been living such a horrible life as the son-in-law of this huge rich group, conglomerate, chaebol group, that he is just at the end of his wits, and he doesn't feel like his wife even remembers that he's there, or pays attention to him. So in a way, Hye-in having this illness kind of re-sparks their devotion, and their I guess puts them into action of actually working in their marriage and finding the love that they do have there. Overall, I felt like the first, until like about maybe episode 12, that it's such good storytelling, that it's very engaging, that it really hooked you there, and it just, like, the way the structure of the drama is that you're kind of like soccer punched with every like episode and everything, and there's just so much going around, and it's like basically Kim Soo-hyun cries in every episode, and this man cries so beautifully. Like, I understand why the director wants him to cry every episode, because he just cries so beautifully, and he's kind of known for that. But around episode 13 is when we kind of like interestingly enough, very much like Hye-in and Hyun-woo's marriage, we get derailed, because there is this plot line with Yoon Sung, who is the villain of the story, sort of. He kind of has a very Mak-jung villain role in it, played by actor Park Sung-hoon, who I heard is getting a lot of bashing online just because of his character. He plays Yoon Yoon-sung, who is a acquaintance of Hye-in, who is, I don't know, because he is very obsessed with her. We kind of get these like flashbacks of how he meets Hye-in while he was in an orphanage, but he kind of has this almost psychopathic like obsession with Hye-in, but we don't really get much of an explanation, and I think that's where it falls flat, because his character is amazing as a villain. I mean, very, like, he really is an antagonist, but it falls flat because you don't really find out why, what is his motivation with his obsession with Hye-in. So that was kind of like something that for me ended up being like a weakness of this drama, because I don't really see why he's so obsessed with Hye-in. And then I think in the last episodes, especially like around episode 14, the story kind of gets away from the writer. I feel like this could have been done well with like a 12 episode run, and it would have been a better like drama for it with a shorter run, just because the story will be a little bit more tight. And I felt like around episode 14 that they just kind of like started tacking on like situations for Haein and Hyunwoo, when the big crisis to their marriage is kind of like not there anymore. Spoiler alert, Haein does end up getting surgery and she does get better, but then they do like the very cliche amnesia plotline. Like I said, this drama feels very much like early 2010 kind of drama, when there's a lot of dramas that have that amnesia plotline. So she ends up forgetting Hyunwoo and ends up believing Yoon Sung, saying that you know, they're the ones that are together. Which, I mean, because it was more of a realistic drama, when you get to that part of the series, you're just kind of like, what? Like, she's a very public figure. How do other people not know and tell her that, hey, you've gotten back together with your previous ex-husband and you guys are now in good terms? And then first, everybody suddenly just accept this other guy as the person that she's with. Like, I mean, if you're that much of a public figure, I mean, people would have been like, hey, remember what you did, like, you know, few months ago when you exposed Yoon Sung as trying to take over the company and all that stuff? But interestingly enough, around episode 13 or 14, that all goes out the window, and apparently everybody else also gets amnesia except for Hyunwoo, who I gotta give the Hyunwoo credit though for a character, because he is pretty smart. He is a smart male, he's a smart protagonist, because usually with these type of dramas that are very 2010s Mokjang-ish drama, that the protagonists are always just getting beaten and outwitted by the antagonist, by the villain, and you're just like, oh gosh, woe is me. Oh, something really bad happened. I don't know what to do. But Hyunwoo is actually pretty smart, and he is pretty productive. And he actually comes toe-to-toe with the villain. And he holds his own. Like, he does things, and he fights back. And to me, I mean, I was amazed. I was like, okay, that's not the type of protagonist that we usually see in this kind of feel of a drama. So I think that was like an advantage, sort of, but it kind of gets rehashed and redone over and over again, around episode 14, 15, 16. And I think that if the ending did not stick it, it did not land the ending, because the ending was a little bit too fairy tale like, and you can already tell that whole epilogue scene in the end was meant for us to pull at the heartstrings and, you know, feel for Haein and Hyunwoo, and you discover that Haein does in fact live a long life until her old age, but she does pass away before Hyunwoo, and Hyunwoo visits her grave as an old man and all that stuff. So I feel like it would have benefited from not having such like a fairy tale ending to it, and that in general it would have been better if this was a 12 episode drama. And probably I feel like if I was the writer, I would have felt that it would be more of a gut punch, much more compelling, if Haein gets this miracle surgery, she gets it better, they rekindle the relationship, they, you know, fall in love, they have their kid, but you find out later on that she, you know, somehow her brain tumor, her ends up coming back, and she does live a life, but not this like long life of like you know, passing away in her 70s. But that the time they spend, because they have overcome this crisis in their marriage, made their love story much more worthwhile. And it's a love for the ages, because even though she dies earlier on, you realize that Hyunwoo and Haeyeon do in fact love each other so much, and they're made for each other. So there's the caveat that I would have wanted a better ending, and I felt that the ending didn't land it correctly. So yeah, those are pretty much my thoughts about and my ramblings about Queen of Tears. I am gonna go on a little bit of a tiny commercial break, and we're gonna be back, and we're gonna talk about another Korean drama called Lovely Runner. On the second segment of our K-drama section of this podcast, and we are gonna talk a little bit about this little Korean drama that I am currently watching called Lovely Runner. It is still on episode 12, I think so. So this is a Korean drama that is for streaming. I think it's like a short drama. It was initially a webtoon that got pretty much turned into Korean drama by TVN, same network as Queen of Tears that I talked about in the previous section. Anyways, so Lovely Runner actually stars Byun Woo-suk and Kim Hye-yeon. A little bit of a synopsis for this drama. It actually airs every Monday and Tuesday. And it started the beginning of April, so it does have a few more weeks of its run. The series follows the journey of Im Seol, who is an ardent fan of the idol Roo Seung-jae. So Im Seol is actually played by Kim Hye-yeon, and Roo Seung-jae is played by Byun Woo-suk. Seol, a once promising film director whose dreams were shattered by an accident leaving her paralyzed from the waist down, finds solace in the music of Seung-jae. However, tragedy strikes again when Seung-jae dies in a tragic accident, leaving Seol devastated. But fate has other plans, as Seol ends up waking up in a classroom 15 years in the past, way before both her and Seung-jae's accidents. Seeing this as a chance from the heavens, Seol vows to change the course of destiny for both of them. So that's a little bit of the synopsis straight from Wikipedia, if you want to check it out there. So this is a Korean drama. The English title is Lovely Runner, but the Korean title literally means run away with Seung-jae on piggyback, which I found a little bit like sad, melancholy a little bit, because originally in the first episode we do see that Seol is paralyzed from the waist down, and she gets around with a wheelchair, and to say that she's piggybacking Seung-jae is kind of a little bit melancholic and a little bit sad. But this is kind of what the tone is of this drama so far. It is definitely quite lovely. It's the kind of story that is simple, in a way that even before you figure out that there is like a whole time traveling plot line to it, it is quite simple in the fact that it is just a story of two people who unfortunately their relationship just doesn't, how should I say it, it's like the timing is just like wrong, and the fact that it's a time traveling type of plotline kind of lends to that Seol has to go back to kind of figure out and eventually find out that Seung-jae was actually in love with her, or was mesmerized by her even in the beginning, and she just hasn't noticed him all along, and that there's a lot of scenes where it talks about destiny and faith, because it plays with those two things quite a lot, because you see a lot of the scenes when Sol comes back in the old timeline, in the past, that there's a lot of times that her and Sungjae's fates actually meet and cross because of circumstances in their lives. It's just that she's never really noticed, because she lived her life not noticing him, that they're actually neighbors, and are actually only started really noticing him in the original timeline when she becomes this huge fan of him because he was part of a boy band. And what a delight this drama is, because when I started watching it, I was quite a bit hesitant, because like I mentioned before, I am getting back into watching Korean dramas, and in particular, I really try not to watch Korean dramas that are still airing. Mainly because a lot of the time I want to spend watching Korean dramas involve me having time, like enough time to binge watch like a 12 or 16 episode drama in one go. Like it's not very common for me to just literally like binge watch the entire series on a day that I'm free. So I'm quite particular and choosy about which Korean dramas I do actually end up watching, because I want to make sure that's the kind of story that's gonna pull me through and engage me through each episode enough for me to like be excited and just be hungry to just get through all of the episodes and binge watch it until the finale, like the last episode. So when I actually came across Lovely Runner, I just kept seeing a lot of people talking about this online, and because Byun Woo-suk and Kim Hyun are, you know, they're popular, but they're not like, you know, like the top paid like actors in Korea. They're like kind of like rising stars in Korean drama. Both of them have had quite a career in K-drama land, because both of them have done a lot of supporting roles in the past. Both of them actually have had a few runs with being the leads of a Korean drama, but I don't think they're well known enough to the point that they're household names in terms of a rom-com until Lovely Runner, because everybody has been talking about the chemistry that Byun Woo-suk and Kim Hye-yeon has. And I was pleasantly surprised, because I haven't really watched a lot of... Actually, this might be the first Byun Woo-suk series I've watched. And I've watched only one of Kim Hye-yeon's series before, which is Extraordinary You with Rowan. So I actually am not quite familiar with their work, or I guess their body of work as actors. And I was pleasantly surprised when I started watching this drama, because both of them have such a wonderful, effortless chemistry, that to the fact that they fully embody their characters. And both roles are quite challenging, because they're both playing their characters at different ages. We first see Sol as like a 30-something-year-old woman who's trying to navigate her life as somebody who is wheelchair bound, and we also see Sungjae as this ultra celebrity who has millions of like endorsements and like commercials, and part of like the most popular like boy group in Korea. So, and then at the same time, because we do it's a whole time slip, time traveling type of plotline, we also see them as high schoolers, seniors in high school, and eventually college freshmen. So both Byun Woo-suk and Kim Hye-yeon have this challenge of kind of showing both ages of both their characters at the ages that I mentioned, and that's quite difficult because you have to show how different the character is at the different age, but also how they're also still the same. So, I mean, fundamentally, you see both characters, like Sol, even when she is wheelchair bound, that you do see a glimpse of the Sol that was cheerful in high school, that was very bubbly, and you kind of see that a little bit, but a little bit also different because she is more mature when we first meet her when she's in her 30s. In the same way that it's a bit of a surprise because we first get introduced to Sanjay as this idol who's kind of like jaded at kind of like the way his career has gotten, and he's struggling with his mental health. He is not happy anymore as an idol, to the contrast when we jump back into the past and we see Sanjay kind of like this very like aloof teenager. And it's just so good. Like, it's so amazing. The dynamics between them is so special, and it's just so cute with the chemistry. But just the way both actors handle that contrast between portraying their characters at different times in their lives is such, it's just truly such a delight to watch. And it's barely halfway through its run. I believe it is actually I believe it's at episode 12 currently this week, and it is actually, I believe, a 16 episode run. So we actually do have a few more weeks to go, and so far the story has just been such a fun story to watch. I would say, though, that I think if they were not paired together, we won't really get to see both actors shine in their characters, because both of them kind of really prop each other up and carry that dynamic. This is also a very surprisingly poignant drama, talking about the issues of mental health and how like the relationship of an idol and a fan, and somebody who has actually been a K-pop fan for a while as well. It's kind of like a little bit endearing to me and close to my heart, because to see Sol's a woman in her 30s be a fan of Sanjay, a specific idol, because of what his music has done for her life, kind of speaks a lot to me, because a lot of the K-pop groups that I love and still follow is because they have like a personal significance in what has happened in my life. And the fact that Sanjay's character in the original timeline struggles a lot with his mental health, with depression and everything, is such, it really just strikes like close to my heart. So I really have enjoyed watching it so far. I'm hoping that, you know, it would stick its landing, and that the next few weeks are actually going to be great episodes, because they do have the potential to be such a sleeper hit. Like, I think a lot of people, that's the bane of being shown at the same time with such a juggernaut drama such as Queen of Tears, because other dramas like this, like Lovely Runner, kind of gets into the background and doesn't get noticed as much. And also the fact that Lovely Runner, at least here in the States, is not on Netflix. It's actually on Viki, which is a bit of a smaller site. So it doesn't get as much exposure internationally as it would be for a K-drama that has a slot in Netflix. So yeah, pretty much it's more of like an indie sleeper hit, I feel like, so far. What do I want to talk about? I mean, I also just want to talk about the actors, the character actors around the main leads, because they are just so fun to watch. I mean, we have like literally the dad of K-dramas, Kim Won-hae, who is playing Sunjay's dad. He is also a restaurant owner, I believe. And if you don't know Kim Won-hae Ajushi, you have not watched Korean dramas, because this character actor is so well known. He is a very well known comedic but also dramatic actor. He was part of SNL Korea. His career has spanned years, pretty much, not just in dramas but also in film. He was in a lot of dramas that I actually loved to, actually way too many to mention, because he was in He Psychometric, he was in Hotel de Luna, he was also in Startup. What else has he been in? Pretty much this man has a hustle for everything. Like, he this actor hustles, and rightly so, because he's such an amazing character actor. Like, when you watch him, the acting is just so subtle that you're just completely immersed at the character he plays, and he does so amazingly as the dad character. It's so fun. Oh my gosh, I can't even talk enough about this actor. And also, let's see. So actually a lot of, like, the actors in this drama are just doing so well and, like, filling out. And the main thing I love about this drama is that when you, especially on the scenes that are set in the past, it's just everything feels so lived in. Like, the setting, like, Sunjay's house feels like it is a house that has been lived in. You feel the absence of his mother, even though it was never outrightly said what happened to his mom. But you immediately kind of get the sense that his mom died when he was young, and that it's just been him and his dad, like, partners in crime all along, and his dad would do everything to ensure that his son has a good future. But it just reflects so well in their house with the blue gate, and it's just the way everything's so set up. And same way with Seol's house, because Seol's mom owns a DVD and store, a rental store, kind of like a Blockbuster store, on her building, and they live above that store. But it's such, I feel like, because I've been to Seoul a couple times now, and it really does feel like you're just there walking on their neighborhood street in Seoul. So it looks very lived in. It doesn't look like it was dressed up to be a set, or it was dressed just for the series. So it looks very realistic and, like, very close to what you would see in Seoul. I despite the whole fantastical, like, part of this drama, because it does have that time jump and everything, or time traveling aspect to it, it's so endearing. And I'm gonna say endearing probably a few times in this section, just because it's the type of drama that makes you feel like it is just a slice of life, that you're just really meeting Seol and Sungjae at different points of their lives, and how in every meeting, like, life and fate just throws a wrench to it, and how much that everything Seol does to change in the past affects the future in ways that she cannot really expect, anticipate, or understand. And the wisdom that she has as a 34, I think that's her age in the original timeline, a 34-year-old being thrust again as a teenager, is both comedic, because you see her just kind of, like, acting like an older, like more mature woman at the antics of high schoolers, even though she's in her high school body. But also just the way she chooses to sacrifice, she makes choices to save Sungjae, really reflects how her mindset is as a 30-something-year-old woman. And it's just so beautifully portrayed that you get so engaged with the story that the episode would be done and you're like, wait, what happened? Like, wait, where are we in the story? Because I really want to know more, and I just want to know more about their lives, and I want to know, and I'm like literally rooting for them to actually have a happy ending. And there's this underlying tinge, like I said, of melancholy in the whole series, because it is a rom-com, but there is quite a lot of moments that you just feel a sense of tinge of sadness, of nostalgia for the days that have gone by. The high school part is set, I believe, like in the tail end of the 200s, like 2000s, I mean, like 2007, 2008, I think, is when it's set. And to me, that's just entirely, oh my god, because those were my high school years, high school and college years. So the characters really fit into my demographic of just feeling nostalgic for that time period of simpler times back in the day in my youth. And you kind of I feel like I live vicariously through Seoul, and just kind of like, I wouldn't know if I want to relive and time jump back into my teens or my 20s though, because that seems horrible. But escaping into this and watching it on Lovely Runner is a delightful watch. So I am looking forward to watching the rest of the run. I really do hope that Seoul and Sungjae have a good ending. There is still a caveat. So far, there is a plot line of this killer murderer dude that is very obsessed with Seoul, and we don't really understand why he wants to kill Seoul. A lot of this series is kind of like going back and finding clues and hints about what really happened in the original timeline, and I have this suspicion that Seoul was actually like a witness to a very horrible crime, and that's how she got paralyzed, because the initial reason how she got paralyzed was not clearly explained in the original timeline of the series in the beginning. So but the villain is just kind of like, I don't know, the actor doesn't really have that much lines, and he just kind of sneers and walk around creepily with like this evil half wink. I don't know, it's very creepy and it's effective, but also you kind of don't really find, there's not really much motivation behind it, because he doesn't really speak that much, and you don't really know what's the motivation. And to me, I'm hoping that whole part of the story kind of like resolves neatly or satisfyingly to me as a viewer, because, or else it's just kind of like just there. I feel like it's Lovely Runner is one of those dramas that kind of want to do a lot of different genres at the same time, and it kind of wants to be a thriller or a murder mystery, when it's also very cutesy, like high school first love rom-com type of drama. So but there is a lot of Korean dramas that are like that, so I'm not that fazed about it, but I do want it to be resolved in a satisfying way. So that's like one of the things that I don't really love that much about the drama. Yeah, pretty much. That's pretty much it, what I thought about it. I'm probably going to have more final thoughts about it that I'm going to post about on my social media, about Lovely Runner, as I kind of watch towards the end in the next few weeks. So if you don't yet, please do follow me on Peach Neon Pink on X, on Twitter. I still call it Twitter. I don't know. People call it, is it called X or still called Twitter? I still call it Twitter. So follow me there on Peach Neon Pink. It is Peach Neon with two N's, Pink on Twitter, for what would be my final thoughts or what my thoughts would be about Lovely Runner as we go along. And yeah, so stay tuned for a little bit of a talk about K-beauty, especially Korean sunscreens. We've gotten to the K-beauty, Korean beauty part of this podcast. We're going to talk a tiny, tiny bit about Korean sunscreens. And like I mentioned before in the intro, this kind of got brought about by the fact that I was in Seoul last summer and it was scorching heat. Way to find us. So it was very hot and sticky. We spent about 4 days in Seoul, just kind of exploring the city. And it was like my second time in Korea, and my first time after the pandemic, to go to Seoul. And I just kind of like saw a lot of things that, a lot of places that I didn't get to see the first time around. Like the very like fun Dongdaemun Design Plaza, the DDP, which was a fun place to go to. But anyways, we were out in the sun quite a lot because we did a tour of the palaces and everything in one of those days. And I kind of started getting into using Korean sunscreen. I actually have used Korean sunscreens as part of my K-beauty regimen in the past before, but I mainly used products from Innisfree. Because I really liked their matte sunscreens before, but I kind of, because of that trip last year, I kind of wanted to try out different other sunscreens. And that's when I started actually exploring. And one of the brands that I actually discovered when I was in Korea last year at Olive Young was this brand called CNP Laboratory. And the product that I actually discovered is not even a sunscreen initially. It was one of their multi-use ampoule balms that the lady at Olive Young recommended to me and my sister, because it was like a water-based balm that you can use pretty much with it's pretty much has nutrients and everything that you can use. I think it's propolis and other stuff. It's basically like does a lot with pigmentation and moisturizes your skin, but it's like water-based, so it's not sticky. So she really recommended that during our trip there, because it's the kind of balm that you can use and it wouldn't be oily after being out in the outside a lot. So because I am I was already familiar with the brand CNP Laboratory, I ended up actually trying their sunscreen, or one of their sunscreens. It's called CNP Laboratory Tone Up Protection Sun. It comes in a 50 ml pump bottle, which is really good. It's really hygienic. Like you can just pump it out pretty much pretty easily. It is SPF 42++++. With a PA, so it's not, I typically like to use a 50 SPF at least, because I really only use it, like, I only apply it once and just, like, sporadically reapply throughout the day with, like, a stick, balm. But this is that it has double sun protection, vitality tone up, no sticky feeling with a matte look. The formula on it has, it's kind of, I would say a light pink, peachy pink, toned And it says it contains a pearl powder that naturally brightens skin tone and evens out before applying foundation. So actually, a lot of times we just use this sunscreen as just by itself without any foundation at all on top of it. And it does do a really good job of being kind of like almost like a filtered blur look that's matte on my face. And it does actually last quite a while. Sometimes I could get like a good maybe like 6 hours on it and wouldn't be oily at all. And so far it hasn't caused like any major breakouts on my face. But I really love that it does have that pink tone, because it does kind of almost is like a tinted moisturizer, and the consistency is not sticky at all. But also not too liquidy, like a milky type of sunscreen formula. So I'm able to like spread it on my face and not feel like it's just like dripping down to my neck. So far that's what I've enjoyed about that sunscreen. I've also tried a few that are a little bit like viral, I guess. I recently tried House of Her Weightless Sun Fluid. This is I believe this is a SPF 50 from what I can remember. Yep, it is an SPF 50 PA++. It's 4+ is Weightless Sun Fluid. This one is a little bit more milky and a little bit more runnier. It doesn't have a white cast. It does provides quite good of a sun protection. This is the kind of sunscreen I feel like I would use if it was really just like really humid out and you don't want extra layers on your face. And it's quite good to add underneath like makeup, because it doesn't really consider it as another layer. It's very fast absorbing, it's not greasy, and it's quite light. And like I said, no white cast on this one. I've also recently tried Haymitch Artless Glow Base SPF 50 PA++ with 3+. This was on sale online when I got it. This is also a bit of like a more liquidy, milky type of sunscreen. It says it's supposed to be a makeup primer, hydrator, UV protector in one, and it brightens dark complexion, improves wrinkles, shimmering pearl-like base that makes your skin glow, moisturizing serum like texture. It does have that serum kind of milky type of texture to it. But what I don't like, and I quickly found out when I first started using it, is that it does settle. So you do have to really shake it really well. Like if you don't mix it, like it just comes out with it, like just the pearl part of it comes out and none of the actual sunscreen part. So you really do have to really shake it. It for me on my skin, it does get greasy. I feel like quite faster than other people. Maybe in like an hour or two, it does start feeling greasy. But also a good option. I don't want to use it just by itself, unlike the CNP laboratory one that I can actually use it on its own and not have to wear foundation over it. I also tried Nombuzin number 1 clear filter sun essence. This one is SPF 50 PA++4+. This is the number one sun essence. This is it's not clear. it is not what it's named after, but it is has a little bit of a kind of like greenish tint to it. It's supposed to kind of relieve redness and calming, because it has a lot of ingredients like herbs and stuff that helps calm down like irritated skin. It also has a little bit of a cooling factor and quite hydrating. It's very lightweight. You almost don't really feel it on your face when you have it on. And But also, it is not really like one that I would use without a foundation, because there is not really any tint to it or any like pearl, pink pearl effect to it. So you do have to put makeup if you want to cover blemishes and stuff. But it has some, I don't know how to pronounce this word, Medexide. One of the ingredients, as well as herbs, natural calming herbs. I found that this is really nice during hot weather. It was quite good in Korea, just because it is very light and has that cooling effect. So for sunscreen, like if you're just out in the sun and you feel very like sweaty, it's actually nice to have a little bit of a cool down effect on it, and a calming, like if you feel like your face is really warm, like it's actually quite soothing to use this sunscreen. So my go-to though for sunscreen that I actually made a point to buy quite a lot when I was in Korea is a brand that actually you guys might already know, because almost everybody buys this sunscreen. It's actually been famous quite a while. It's called from the brand Beauty of Joseon. This is their matte sunstick with mugwort and camellia. I end up actually buying like at least 6 of these when I was in Korea at Olive Young, because one, they were like ridiculously so much cheaper than buying it here. I think there it was about $14 when I was there, and if you buy it online, it ranges from like a good 28, 30 bucks for each one. So definitely so much more expensive here if you buy it stateside, which understandable, they have to export it here. So but since I was there and it was a product that I already loved, I ended up buying a few of them. So this one is a go-to for me. It's also an SPF 50 PA plus, because this is a matte stick. You can carry it, and it's very convenient for when you're on the go and you just want to like reapply your sunscreen. And it's convenient because you don't have to carry like a liquid sunscreen, and it's just a balm type of thing that you can use. And it's not as like I guess it's not as like cumbersome to have, because you can just pop it in your purse or your bag and it would totally be fine, because it's not liquid at all. So I definitely recommend the Beauty of Joseon's sunstick, because that is all around such a good buy. There's also another one that I really loved that I don't remember. Let's see, what is the maybe I'll talk about it on the next podcast, because I don't remember like the actual brand, and I have finished the one that I bought from Korea, but that one's also pretty good. When I do see it, I will, or remember what the brand is, I will post about it, because it's such an amazing sunstick as well that I discovered at Olivia when I was there. So, those are the sunscreens that I've been loving lately that I have tried out. I feel like at my age now, in my 30s, I need to be more proactive about sun damage on my skin and finding the sunscreen that works for me, that's effective for my combination oily skin, but also is convenient enough and easy enough for me to apply and for me to remember to apply, is something that I've been kind of like playing around with lately in the past few months, just because everything with skincare, especially with K-beauty, kind of really have to try it out and find the combination that works for you, because not everything that you see online would actually work on your skin. So a little bit of trial and error is what I've been doing, and so far those products have been working well. But the CNP Laboratory one, the Tonal one, has been my go-to for like an everyday sunscreen. I wear it, I apply it right before I go to work as well. It lasts me all throughout my work time, which is good. And I almost always tend to gravitate towards matte formulas because of my combination oily skin, and I don't want to like look shiny or anything throughout the day, so I do really recommend those sunscreens if you guys want to check it out. And so we have reached the end of this podcast episode, of a comeback podcast episode. Hopefully you guys did enjoy listening to my ramblings about Korean dramas, Queen of Tears, and The Lovely Runner on this episode, as well as my very short little breakdown of Korean sunscreens that I've been testing out so far and has worked for me. And like I said, it's comeback, so I am hoping to do more of these podcast episodes, and I hope that you will stay with me and listen and find the time on your day to spend with me rambling about everything I love about K-dramas, K-beauty, and K-pop. And if you'd like to follow me online, you can find me on Twitter at @peachneonpink. Neon has two N's on the ends. That's at @peachneonpink on Twitter. And also you can find podcast episodes, as well as the older podcast episodes for Peach Neon Pink Ramblings, online and all of the major podcast platforms. So until then, hope to see you guys soon.